First of all, let me check the time because that fellow over there told me if I talk more than 58 minutes, he's going to cut me off. Okay, so it's 10:15. I mean, yes, 12:15. My name is Martha Ann, and I'm a very grateful, recovering member in good standing of the Thursday Noon Al-Anon Family Group in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hey, everybody. Now, first of all, I want you to know I'm not an authority on Al-Anon or anything else for that matter. My opinions are my own, and I'm not here to take my husband's inventory. I used to do that, but I don't do that anymore. But it is an honest program, and I want you to know that, and you'll notice too, as we go along in my story, I will make a few loving observations. And I want to thank you all for inviting me. It's just, I love to come back to Georgia. It's close to home and nobody has an accent down here. I have been to places to speak and I was asked that I bring an interpreter with me. But I don't have that problem here. And I love that slogan, see and share love. I have seen and shared so much love since my daughter and I got off the plane yesterday. By the way, I want you to meet my daughter. She flew all the way from Portland, Oregon to come with me to be here with you all. Stand up, Candy. She just loves Al-Anon and she loves AA's, so y'all watch out. I want to tell you what it was like and what happened and what it's like today. I came from a very happy home. There was no alcohol in my home. My parents didn't drink. And it was I was brought up knowing that I was loved and I felt secure and I was told I could be anything I wanted to be if I would apply myself. And so life was beautiful for me. Then one day, I met the man that I had dreamed about all my life up to that point, and I knew exactly what he was going to look like. He'd have dark, wavy hair and blue eyes and dimples, and he'd love to dance, and it would be nice if he could sing. And don't you know, that rascal came riding up on the most beautiful big horse. And he wasn't a knight in shining armor. He was in the United States 6th Cavalry. And they don't come any better than that. He had on leather boots and spurs, and talk about romantic. Oh, my goodness. We had more fun, and we danced, and we sang, and we loved. It was just wonderful. He was everything I ever wanted. So I decided he was going to marry me. And he did. And one thing I didn't know about him was I didn't know that he drank. I'd never seen him take a drink in all the time I had known him. And I didn't find that out until the first Christmas. We were married on the 18th of December. And a week later exactly was Christmas. And the regiment had a big party because it was back in 1942. Now, if you want to count up like that, you can. That was a long time ago. We had a wonderful time at first, and then all of a sudden, he wasn't able to dance very well, and he was stumbling and singing in my ear, and I thought, what is he doing? It just didn't sound romantic at all. And I looked at him, and I thought, something's wrong with him. He's sick. That's what it is. Well, it turned out he was drunk, and I didn't know that. So we got home, and that's the first time I put him to bed drunk. And I didn't like that a bit. I really was angry because he didn't need me when he was drinking that night, and we didn't have any fun at all, so it was a bad experience for me. But we decided, you know, that we wouldn't talk about that, because you don't talk about unpleasant things. And he was getting ready to go overseas, and I never knew from one day to the next when he would be gone. And so I didn't want to get in any arguments with him, but I didn't like that. So he did go away in World War II, and he didn't come back for 2 years. And when he came back, we celebrated our first anniversary together, the third anniversary. And you know what he did. He got rip-roaring drunk. And I'd waited all those 2 years, giving birth to a baby son and raised that child and waiting for my hero to come home. Now what does he do? He gets drunk. So I was furious about that. But I, you know, being a good army wife, you don't give up. You just never retreat. You fall back and you regroup. So that's what I did. And I did all the wrong things for all the right reasons. Because I loved this man with all my heart. I loved him so much. And he became obsessed with his drinking, and I became obsessed with stopping him from drinking. I hadn't yet learned about alcoholic obsession and compulsion. That's when the body can't take it anymore and the mind can't leave it alone. And that's the insanity of it. I realized he had great potential, and the most important thing was he needed me, I thought. And then I could help him, and someday he'd stop. And I always had hope. I never gave up hope, even in the darkest days. And I had heard an acronym for hope. It's hang on, peace exists. So I hung on, and I hung on for year after year after year, wondering when it was ever going to stop. So I had my little battle plan. I decided first thing I did was nag him. I said, if you loved me, you wouldn't drink. You wouldn't treat me like this. My daddy and mother didn't have these problems. And he said, well, I do love you. And I said, how can you love me and do this? Well, he didn't have an answer, so that didn't work. It only justified his last drunk and gave him the excuse he was looking for to drink again. Now, I always tell this story because when I finally heard about the second step, I thought, well, I'm not crazy. He's the one that's crazy. I don't drink. Nothing wrong with me. So I decided, I was a heavy smoker at that time, and I decided I would put this proposition to him. If you'll stop drinking, I'll stop smoking. He said, if you want to stop smoking, that's your business. I can stop drinking anytime I want to. And I believed him. I tell you, I'm the answer to an alcoholic's prayer. I believed everything he ever told me. No matter how much I knew up here it was wrong, I believed it. Alcoholism is I have to tell you this story, okay, going up and down. He said no, he wasn't going to stop drinking, and I thought, well, I'll show him anyway. It's willpower, that's what it is, and I love to smoke. So I stopped smoking for 2 weeks, and I nearly went crazy. I know today alcoholism is an addiction, and so is smoking. I didn't know that then, but I tried not to smoke for 2 weeks, and it was torture, but I did it until that morning. I went down to the stairs and found that bottle of vodka peeking out behind the refrigerator. And did you all know vodka doesn't smell? I could smell it, but I could never find it. But that morning I found it, and I was so furious. So I just said, I'll fix him, and this is my insanity. I thought this was a great idea. I got some cigarettes and hid them in an old flower pot downstairs in the basement, and I'd go downstairs and sneak a smoke, and all the time he was telling our friends, gee, Martha hadn't smoked in a long time. This is wonderful. I'm so proud of. And I was laughing to myself because I was smoking up a storm. The thing was, he was drinking as long as I was smoking, too. And we made many trips up and down the stairs. And really, it's the truth. Sometimes we'd pass each other on the stairs. And we, depending on how good I felt and how good he felt, we'd sometimes just stop and chat, you know. Well, that didn't work, so I had to give that up. But alcoholism is a lonely disease. It's lonely for the alcoholics who suffer from it, and it's lonely for those of us who love you and have to stand by and watch you slowly killing yourselves, and we can't stop you. We can't help you because we don't know how. And I felt I was such a failure. I didn't drink myself, but I did have an addiction, and that was to a mind-altering male. When he drank, my personality changed. And I changed from a loving, caring person into a most hateful, screaming witch you've ever seen. And I stuffed my feelings because when I expressed them and he'd get angry, then he'd get drunk. And I was a victim of alcoholism as surely as if I had drunk out of the bottle instead of hiding behind it. And I'll never forget, and never want to, the morning I found myself, I'd sent the children off to school, and I found myself sitting on the floor of my closet. And it was dark without the light, and I had my head on my knees and my arms around my knees, rocking back and forth and crying and saying, God, where are you? You've always helped me. Where are you? Why are you letting this go on and on? And what's wrong with me? And there were no answers. So I didn't know what to do. I kept this a big secret from everybody, so I thought, I'll tell his mother. She'll fix him. Well, if you haven't done that, don't. Told his mother that her son had a drinking problem, and it was serious, and she looked at me and she said, he didn't drink till he married you. There's so much blame. I blamed her. He was her son. If she'd raised him right, he wouldn't have this problem. And she blamed me. I was his wife. If I were a better wife, he wouldn't have to drink, because he never did anything wrong. Well, I was, this is pitiful. I hate to say this, but I'd say to him, what can I do to make you happy? What is it you want that I'm not doing? If you'll just tell me, I'll do it. I know that something I'm not doing right. So he thought a minute. We're never at a loss for words. He said, well, if you keep the house clean and keep children quiet and keep those toys cleaned up off the floor, and then I want some peace and quiet when I get home. So I began frantically cleaning the house. Every single day, and it was just ridiculous the things I did. I'd scrub the floors, I'd put wax down, the next morning take wax off, put the scrub them, put wax down again, washed windows, did the curtains, just went crazy with all of this. Well, of course, if he had any romantic ideas in those days, I was too tired. I just had a headache. So he couldn't win. The house was always clean then from then on. And when he'd come in at night, here was a sofa and the three little children sitting there with the dog down there beating his tail on the floor. Daddy was coming home, and in walked the hero to a clean house. And I thought, well, this surely is going to make the things all right. Everything will be fine. He sees I've done such a good job and has wonderful dinner waiting for him. And I was at the door all cleaned up and made up and hair combed and perfumed and everything. and with a big kiss for him, and oh, everything was fine. But he still drank. So then I thought, okay, I'll show him how the house gets that way. I'll shame him sober. So he had his uniforms and I had mine. And in those days, ladies did not wear jeans. And I had an old pair of painter's jeans, big baggy ones. I'd have been in style today, but I wasn't. So I had those, and I had a scrub bucket and a brush. I was so pitiful looking. I tried to be as pitiful as possible. And I have to tell you this. I wore torn underwear. And I made it as awful looking as possible because I wanted him to see what his drinking was doing to me and how could he hurt me like this. And he said it did. You know, he looked, he said, "Is that all you have to wear?" And I said, "Of course it is. You spend everything on whiskey, and what's left I spend on the children's clothes. Nothing left for me." And I wanted to hurt him because he was hurting me. His alcoholism was hurting me. And I didn't know what to do about it. Many times I would say, I could just kill him. But never once did I want to kill him dead. Now, Al-Anons understand that. I couldn't fix him, and I felt guilty, and I felt that I'd failed him. Alcoholism was poisoning him, and my reaction to it poisoned me. And physical symptoms began for me. I began to have arthritis and severe migraine headaches, and so tired, so much fatigue. And then the silent screams began. I used to scream and yell at him, and that didn't do anything but make him get drunk, and he wanted to get away. And that wasn't what I wanted. I wanted him to stay with me. So the silent screams began, and that's like when you have a nightmare and somebody's chasing you, and you're running and screaming at the top of your lungs, and nobody sees you, and nobody can hear you. And that's the way it felt to me. But they weren't all bad times. My husband was a periodic drinker. And in those dry times, we just made as many happy memories for our children as we possibly could because we didn't want them to know there was a problem in the house. And we wanted them to have these happy memories like I had of my childhood. And I have to say this, I become very defensive today when anybody says to me, alcoholics don't have any willpower. If they did, they wouldn't drink. And I happen to be one who believes that alcoholics have more willpower than anybody I've ever known in my life. To live through what they do, or what you all do, and then find sobriety and you stay sober. And I admire you so very, very much. And I love all alcoholics. I truly do. And I seem to be a magnet. I draw you to me. I can walk in a room and all of a sudden, there you are. And it's wonderful. I do have great compassion for those who are still suffering with this disease and haven't found our fellowship. And daily I pray for them and for their suffering families. Well, we've been in the Army for 28 years, and it's survived two wars, not counting our war. And it was time for him to retire, he said. So he decided that last year that he would not drink, all on his own. I had nothing to do with that. He said, I'm not going to drink. Wonderful, wonderful. So I thought, this is what retirement's going to be. Well, I wish I could tell you that that's what it was, but it wasn't supposed to be. So when he retired from Fort Knox, Kentucky, as they do when somebody has served long and honorably as he had, and he had many, many medals to prove his combat experience, they have a big parade, and it was wonderful, and everybody was happy. And after the big dinner that night, we came back to the quarters, and he took his bottle and poured out the bottle into the sink. And I said, my gosh, he's really serious about this. And I thought, that's wonderful. He really means what he says, not going to drink anymore. Well, then he said he wanted to have a new life and he didn't want alcohol to have any part of it. And as we were leaving, we went to church the next morning, and as is the custom, the tanks were all lined up along the road, and they were standing out there waving, and the families saying goodbye to us. And this couple came up and said, take this card and look up this couple in Virginia Beach. So tell them that you saw us here and tell them hello for us. So I took the thing, put it in my wallet, and off we went. And we hadn't gone too far, and he started complaining. Nobody knew how to drive but him. And what does that person think he's doing cutting in front of me? He was getting more agitated by the moment, and I could see the signs. We know it's coming, we just don't know when. And that's terrible to live in that anticipation. So we stopped in Richmond to visit with my mother before we came on down to Virginia Beach. And when we were there, he took his bottle, and of course when that night at the motel he got rip-roaring drunk. And the next morning we went to Richmond and went in my mother's house, and he went in the kitchen, took his bottle and slammed it down on the sink, just waiting for anybody to say a word. Well, nobody said anything. There wasn't anything to say. So the next morning we left for Virginia Beach, and as I was going out the door, my mother said, I have something I want you to take with you and read. And it was a tiny little book, and I said, okay. She said, I think it'll help you. So I took it with me and just threw it in the car, and that was the end of it as far as I was concerned. We got down to the beach, and for the first time I saw round-the-clock drinking for 3 weeks, and that 3 weeks was to be a crossroads in our lives. I knew he was either going to survive or he was going to die, and I couldn't keep him from dying, and I couldn't live without him. I couldn't live with him, and I couldn't live without him. And on a Sunday morning, at the end of that 3 weeks, I was sitting in the room. We had a little efficiency place on the beach, because we didn't know where we were going or what we were going to do. And I watched the sun rise over the water, and I'm a very good swimmer. My daddy taught me to swim when I learned to walk. And I looked out and saw the sun rising, and I thought, oh, I think I'll just go out into that water and swim towards the sun and keep swimming until I can't swim anymore, and then I'll just slip under the water and it'll all be over. I never ever had thoughts of killing myself, but I didn't want to live without him. And so I got up to go out the door, and as I walked past the chair, I saw the little book that was sitting there that I'd thrown there when we came in 3 weeks ago, and I hadn't even seen it since. I picked it up and I sat down and opened it up, because I thought, my mother told me to read this book and I haven't done it, and if I can kill myself tomorrow. So opened the book, and as often happens, words jumped out at me, and those words were so simple, and they said, I am with you always. And up to that moment, I never felt more alone or unwanted or unloved in my entire life. But I knew then that God was with me, as he had been always. I'd prayed and prayed, and he didn't answer my prayers. But I knew that something was going to happen, because I felt a strange warmth around me, and it was just like my daddy holding me in his arms. And my mother had told me I had two fathers, the one that I loved here on earth and the other one that I loved, who is our Heavenly Father. And I actually felt that, and I prayed what I believed to be the greatest, strongest prayer anyone can pray. And it's simple. God, help me. I can't help myself. And I don't know what to do. I love him so much, but I don't know what to do. And this wonderful peace was with me. So I got up off my knees and went back to the bedroom and laid down on the bed. And as soon as I laid down on the bed, he jumped up and went staggering into the kitchen. And I thought, it's okay, I don't have to worry. And I went to sleep. And very shortly after that, I was awakened by my husband. And I looked at him and I thought, my goodness, he looks so wonderful. What's happened to him? And he put his arms around me and he said, honey, you're not going to believe this. But he said, I was in the kitchen mixing a drink. And I realized, all of a sudden, I don't know what hit me, but all of a sudden I realized, if I keep drinking, I'm going to die. But I don't know how to live without drinking. So I did the only thing I knew to do. And he said, I called AA, and I asked somebody, please help me. Talk about miracles. They happen every day. And it happened to us. Now, that's his miracle, it's not mine. I just gave him back his life and his problems, which were mine, never mine to begin with. And you know, AA sent a couple right out to meet with us. And that man sat and told my husband his story, and he was a military man too. And my husband's attention was riveted on him because he understood. He knew exactly what my husband was feeling and thinking. He understood that. And then this beautiful lady in Al-Anon started telling me my story. And I said, how do you know these things about me? She said, I'm telling you about myself, and you can identify with them. And so they were wonderful friends. And I thought, you know, your name sounds a little familiar. So I got that card out, and do you know, this couple is the same couple we should have looked up 3 weeks before, but we weren't ready to meet them then. I just have to believe that. Now, that couldn't have been coincidence. Couldn't have been. But anyhow, life was beautiful. I have never been that happy in my entire life. The beginning of AA for him. Now, you notice I say AA. I wanted to be in AA so bad and they wouldn't have me. I loved going to AA meetings with my husband, and I just loved listening to your stories and just marveled at how you could live through all that you did and be the wonderful people that you are today and carry a message to help save lives all over the world. I was just so in love with everybody. It was great. And when we went to that first meeting and they offered a chip to anybody who wanted to try, here's my husband with all his pride. And when I saw him raise his hand and he walked up to get his chip, the first chip, the white one, and he had it all the rest of his life. He kept that one chip. And so that began a wonderful life for us. And I thoroughly enjoyed that week that they allowed me to go to AA meetings. One whole week. And then they kept telling me, there's a place for you. And I said, now what do I need to go to that Al-Anon thing for? He's already said he's going to stop drinking. He hadn't had a drink. And he's practicing the program. And everything is wonderful. And they just smiled, and they let me stay for that week. At the end of the week, we were going to a Monday night meeting, and it was a closed meeting, but I didn't know what closed meetings were. So we got there, and great big old Elmo, his name was, 6'4", stood there, and he took me by the arm, and he said, "Honey, you can't come in here tonight." And I said, "Why not?" "Well, this is a meeting just for alcoholics." And I said, "Well, that's what I've been looking for. This is where you tell the secrets of how you keep them from drinking." He said, "Boy, do you need that other program." So he had me by one arm, and another grabby old fella got me by the other one, and my feet didn't touch the floor. Carried me right across the hall, opened the door, and threw me into this room. And he said, "Here's another one for you." Oh, I was so grateful to them and have been since that day. These people, this is what I was looking for and didn't know it. But they understood me. I didn't have to explain myself. They understood me and they loved me when I was unlovable. And they shared their experience, strength, and hope with me and put me back together and made me a whole person again. And they taught me to release with love and faith. And when you release the alcoholic, he can get well. But to remain a slave to alcoholism is to be destroyed or severely injure your children, and it contributes to the illness of the alcoholic. They gave me tools and not rules. And they taught me how to use them, and they let me try. When I stumbled and fell, there was always the outstretched hand of Al-Anon with love and compassion and encouragement. Al-Anon friends understand your past, they believe in your future, and they accept you just as you are today. My husband and I got sick together, and they told us we could get well together, and that we're not bad people trying to be good. Just sick people trying to get well. And AA tells you all to go to meetings and don't drink. Well, Al-Anon says go to meetings and don't think. I could get into terrible trouble when I would think too much, because I would start to analyze things, and that didn't help me at all. My mind's a dangerous neighborhood, and I don't go in there alone. I say my prayers and I take my sponsor with me. Today I have a choice, and I thank God each day that I have that choice. And I take the first 3 steps as soon as I open my eyes, because I have to know who's in control, not me, but my higher power. And those first 3 steps are so important to me that I repeat them every day. Well, I'll go over the others too, but the first 3 have special meaning for me. And I ask for God's will for me for this day. I don't ask for things anymore. I don't ask for what I think I want or need. I just ask for His will, and please give me the power and the strength to carry it out. And I place my loved ones and myself in God's hands and ask Him to watch over us all. I saw what alcohol was doing to him, but I didn't know what it was doing to me. I thought I was okay, and my husband kept telling me, "You're okay, honey, it's me." But it wasn't. I thought I had only one defect, and that was an alcoholic husband. And my first inventory devastated me, because the halo that I'd worn so proudly suddenly began to fall off. Instead of a halo, it became a noose. I'd changed from that loving person that I thought I was. And I shed many tears of remorse and guilt. And then I began to work on myself, realizing that I was not all bad. And I did do some good things. And today, I still have tears, but I see rainbows through my tears. And they told me I needed to forgive myself, knowing that I did the best I could with what I had to work with at the time. And I believe that forgiveness is a must. No matter how hurt or betrayed we may feel, I believe that to relive the past, I can get buried there. But I choose to live this day the very best that I possibly can. And I thought my children were not affected because I had protected them so well. Well, I found that that was not right either. They were more affected by their mother's neurotic behavior than they ever were by their father's drinking. And you don't know how it pains me to say that. They sensed their daddy was sick. They didn't know what was wrong, but they knew something, that he was sick. Then what in the world was wrong with Mama, they did not know. They never knew the cause of my rage. We could be playing and having a good time, and all of a sudden, I had bionic ears. I could hear that pop of the cork, or I could hear a drink being poured. He said I could hear it when he was in Tokyo, but I could hear it, and once I heard that, I said, there he goes, he's sneaking another drink, and I would be furious, just livid. And the children didn't ever know what caused all of this. I must have done something right, because we raised three children, and each one is a successful person. When God gave us six beautiful grandchildren, and now we have two great-granddaughters, and none of them ever saw Granddaddy drunk. That's a miracle. And I made amends to my children. That was fun to do. The middle child was a girl, and she's named for me. And she had a horse farm in horse country in Virginia. And she would enter horse shows and let me ride one of her horses. And we'd compete against each other. And she'd say, Mother, you're going to have to win this one on your own. And I said, well, you just try and beat me. And I'm such a competitor. Anyway, it was fun to do that with her. That's what she loved to do, and I was able to have the time to do those things with her. And then, of course, Candy said, well, come on out, now you're riding a horse again, Mother. Come on out to Bend and ski, because we used to ski when we were stationed in Germany. Well, it had been, 35 years at least since I'd been on skis, but I'm game. So we went out there and had a wonderful time, and went up on the mountain, and it was just beautiful. It was a gorgeous day, and started skiing down. I looked down, it was about 11,000 feet on the beginner slope. And I looked down, I thought, gee, I hope I make this. And we did do real well. I fell down a few times, and then finally Candy said, Mother, get in the same position you do when you jump your horse, and get loose, and you'll be okay. So I did that. Oh, we whizzed on down the mountain, just having a great time. Then I heard a noise, and I looked around, and here her two children coming flying down the mountain with their ski poles waving, saying, go for it, Grandma! So we had some fun times, really. And then our son honored his father. When our son graduated from the Naval Academy, he was married the next day, and he asked his daddy to be his best man. And Jack, my husband, said, well, son, don't you want one of your classmates to be? No, Dad, I want you to be my best man. And that gave him such a lift, made him feel so good. It was a beautiful wedding, and funny thing, when it came back from their honeymoon, our son came in the house. He said, Mom, would you teach my wife how to bake bread? And I said, well, sure, I will. Why? And he said, well, some of the happiest memories of my childhood were coming home after football practice or something and smelling the baked bread. He said, oh, it smells so good. And you'd always let me have some, and I'd spread it with butter and have a big glass of milk. He said, that was so good, and I want that in my home. Well, I had to laugh to myself. That child never knew why I baked bread. You know, anybody who bakes bread, you know, you got to let it rise. And then when it rises, you have to punch it down and hit it with both, just as hard as you can. You pick it up and throw it down and put flour on it. And I'm so grateful that I took out my anger on that bread, on that dough, because I had the lightest and best bread, and I didn't know I was making happy memories from a child. Oh, mercy. And so many miracles have happened. I was able to stop smoking, and his sponsor treated me like I was a drunk and did the same way he would a drunk. And in 2 weeks, he had completely gotten me off of cigarettes, and I have not smoked in over 32 years. And I'm very grateful for that. And then remember the lingerie. That was pitiful, all that stuff. It was so sad looking. If it didn't have enough holes in it, I made more, and it was really bad. And I'm so glad to tell you this, and I identified with the speaker last night, and you'll know why in a minute. My husband did notice that, and it hurt him very, very much. And so he started buying all of my lingerie and underwear. And I mean, it was gorgeous. It is gorgeous. And he loves me to tell this, and he said, be sure to tell him that I have a gold card with Fredericks of Hollywood. Stuff I'd never buy for myself, but it's kind of fun. Well, the greatest test of my faith came on a spring morning in May. I answered a knock at my door, and there stood a chaplain and two Marine officers. And they'd come to tell me the most awful news that any mother could ever receive. They told me that my son, who was a Marine fighter pilot, had been on his second tour in Vietnam, and he was shot down. And they said, he's missing. And I held on to that. I said, missing, not dead, missing. And so I thought, hoped and prayed that we'd get word soon that they'd picked him up. Well, I didn't know what to do. So I did what I normally do when in times of crisis, and then in happy times too. I got on my knees and I prayed hard. And I remembered that morning I had put each of my loved ones in God's hands. I'd put my son in God's hands that morning. And if I believed what I said I did and prayed, I knew that wherever he was, God was with him. Well, the circle of love that's Al-Anon and AA surrounded us. I don't know how they found out, but they came to our home, and we couldn't sleep. We were trying so hard, couldn't sleep, and they were trying every way they could to help us. And we just clung together with a heartache that was so enormous that no human power could. But we knew that God could and he would if we asked. And I always tell this, and my husband prayed out loud, I thank you, God, for finding Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank you, God, for my sobriety, and I thank you, God, that I don't have to go out tonight and get drunk and leave my wife. To face this alone. Alcoholics Anonymous is a wonderful, wonderful fellowship. And I'm so grateful for it, because without it, I wouldn't be here today. And we couldn't have survived those years, those long years that we waited for any word at all of our son, whether he was alive or dead. My mother comforted me with this story of a mother who had lost her son, and she didn't know where he was, and she kept praying and asking God, if you'd just let me know, is he alive or is he dead? if you just let me know that, then I could go on. And God answered her prayer, and he said, I have your son, and he's safe with me. But more important for you to remember is, I gave you my son to comfort you. And that has been my comfort and my strength through these long 30 years of waiting for some kind of word. I did something recently that I put off doing, and I realized I should have done it sooner, but I wasn't ready. I made an application, and now I belong to another fellowship, and it's Gold Star Mothers of America. And that's one way I can honor my son and keep him from being forgotten. When tragedy comes, you can decide how it's going to affect you. You can just get mad and scream, why did God let this happen? He was such a good man, a good Christian man. Why did this have to happen? Or you can say, God allowed this to happen. He didn't make it happen, but he allowed it to happen. And how is God going to use this? My God doesn't make mistakes, and not once has he ever failed me in my time of need. And my time and God's time just don't always mesh, but he's never been late. And I no longer think of him as missing, because God knows where he is. And God gives me strength to accept what is, and he won't let me endure anything that we can't handle together. And my God walks with me on my mountaintops, and I have had many in my life. And he carries me through the valleys, because I can't do it alone. And we've had more problems in sobriety than ever had when he was drinking. Had they happened when he was drinking, we couldn't have survived it, of that I'm sure. And my husband had a heart attack in 1985. But I put him in God's hands, and the right people were in the right place at the right time, and he recovered with minimal damage to his heart. But we knew that he was on borrowed time, and so we lived each day the best we could, and we went forward a day at a time, thanking God at night for another beautiful day together. And our children didn't have any problems with alcohol or drugs, and that's another miracle. And I'm grateful for that. But nobody told me that alcoholism can skip generations. And our oldest grandchild was 20 years old, and he was coming home one night, and an 18-wheeler came barreling down the highway and ran a red light and ran into him and hit him broadside and killed him instantly. And it was after he was killed that we found out that his blood level, alcohol level, was 2.4. And we had no idea that he ever had a drink. He drank like his grandfather in secret. And we were shocked. It was a terrible thing that happened, and we had to get through that. I remember being in the church that morning of his funeral and asking God why. I didn't ask why. I never had asked why before, but this time, why? He's so young and had such a brilliant future ahead of him. Why did this have to be? And then I remembered something I read in the big book, and it said, not everybody is capable of getting well. And I believe that Scott was one of those who didn't have that opportunity. He couldn't be honest and couldn't admit he had a problem. But my God doesn't take away, he gives. And he gave Scott peace. And he didn't have to suffer the 28 years of active alcoholism that his grandfather did. And as much as we missed him, and as much as we didn't want him to be taken away, that's what happened, and we know it was for a good reason. But another alcoholic told me one time that a practicing alcoholic does not die in vain. And I pray the good Lord that Scott's death was not in vain, and that he may have bought sobriety for the other 5 grandchildren. Serenity is not the absence of problems. It's the ability to work through them. And I'm so grateful that you and AA shared your program with us, the family. I lost my Jack to alcoholism, and God and AA gave him back. And another miracle, we celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary. That was 10 years ago. And we got married again, just like we did the first time. Only this time we were surrounded by children and grandchildren. And my 2 girls sing together beautifully. And they put their own words to that song, "Thanks for the Memories." And what a blessing that was for my husband and for me. Because they didn't remember the bad times. They remembered happy, special times. And as long as we live, we will remember that. And try. When I begin to feel guilty over something I remember that happened a long time ago, I remember the song that they sang, and how grateful they were that they had a happy home. Jack's health began to decline in 1998, and just before Thanksgiving, we knew that it was time to call the children and grandchildren home. And they all came, and we had a happy Thanksgiving. It was wonderful. The children acted like teenagers, and they told on each other, and the things that I thought one of them did when they were little, their other one confessed, "No, Mama, I did it." And Jack was sitting in his chair, and he just smiling. He enjoyed the whole thing. It was so wonderful. Laughter filled our home. And each one of the children and grandchildren had a special moment with their father. And it was a happy time. Well, Jack died on December the 13th, surrounded by his family. He died in 1998, and he died peacefully in my arms. And they say that hearing is the last thing to go, and as I held him, I was telling him how much I loved him, and I know that's what the last thing he heard, and I couldn't have asked for more. He was drunk for 28 years, and he was sober for 29 consecutive years. And I couldn't have asked for anything more. So I'm grateful for that. And we buried him in Arlington Cemetery with full military honors, as befitted a cavalryman who was a hero, complete with a riderless horse. And if you don't know what that is, it's a very beautiful sight. It's a black satin horse with a saddle on, and the boots are in the saddle reversed. None of this could have happened without AA and Al-Anon. All our amends were made years ago. We'd forgiven each other, we'd forgiven ourselves, and we'd said everything that we needed to say to each other. And I have no regrets to this day. I have no regrets. But this past 3.5 years have been the most difficult ones of my whole life. But I'm doing what he wanted me to do. He told me to live like a good army wife, to carry on, to have a happy life, and to continue to carry our message whenever and wherever I'm asked. He called it our love story, and that's what it was. The pain is deep, But the memories are beautiful, and I wouldn't take anything for them. And you know, if I had to live it all over again, knowing today what I know now, I'd do it again in a heartbeat. So, I'm going to close now before he cuts me off. I'm going to sum this up with a story that my mother told me as a child about the oysters that live in the Chesapeake Bay. We have the best oysters in the world, and don't believe anybody else if they tell you that's not true. These Lynn Haven oysters are terrific. Well, she said, you know, we were gathering shells on the beach, and I said, picked up this funny looking shell, and I said, well, this one's not a keeper, this is ugly. And she said, look at it again. And she didn't know anything about Al-Anon. She had no idea, and she said, turn it over. So I thought, okay, I'll turn it over. I turned it over, and the other side was not bad. So that was a keeper. And she said, you know, oysters live on the bottom of the ocean in the sand, and they don't do anything to hurt anybody. They just live there and do whatever oysters do to make them happy. And one day, a grain of sand gets into that oyster, and it gets down on the soft underbelly of the oyster, and it's painful, and it hurts. And the oyster doesn't know what to do about it right away, but she said, I think those oysters know that there is a power greater than anything. And so they start working right away, and they build a milky substance, and they wrap it around this grain of sand until finally one day a beautiful pearl is formed. Something beautiful has come out of something that was so painful and hurtful. And so that's what Al-Anon has done for me. That grain of sand that ended our happy marriage was alcoholism. And Al-Anon and AA have helped me to cover the fear I had with faith, the anger that I had with serenity, and the guilt with acceptance, and despair with hope. And resentment, I had so much resentment, was changed to compassion. And the self-pity was covered with gratitude. And the false pride with the beginning of humility. And all that insanity has been covered with sanity. And all that hate has been covered with love. And love is what Al-Anon is all about. Love of each other, love of ourselves, and love of our God. The message of Al-Anon is hope. You can begin with just a spark of hope and a glimmer of faith. And through honest practice and study of the Al-Anon program, that spark can be fanned into a glimmer of glimmer into a blaze of hope and faith, and it lights our lives and the lives of those around us. And I want to thank you again for inviting me back down here. It was wonderful the first visit, and this visit has been even better. You all really know how to treat a gal. Thank you so much, and may the good Lord hold you in his hands until we meet again.